I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show on BBS Radio with additional material at www.holistichealthshow.com. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My first guest tonight is Dr. Bruce Fife, an author, speaker, certified nutritionist, and naturopathic physician. He has written over 20 books, including Coconut Water for Health and Healing, The Coconut Oil Miracle, and Eat Fat, Look Thin. He is publisher and editor of the HealthWays newsletter and serves as president of the Coconut Research Center. He is recognized internationally as the foremost authority on the health and nutritional aspects of coconut and related topics. He can be reached at www.coconutresearchcenter.org. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Bruce.
It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you. Bruce, you have written many books, and the one I want to focus on is the one that most relates to weight loss. And in that book, which is Eat Fat, Look Thin, what type of fat are you talking about?
You know, some people find this kind of strange, but the fat that I'm talking about is coconut oil.
Mm-hmm.
And in that book, I describe how to use coconut oil to lose weight, to increase energy, and to improve thyroid function.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. And in the book, you say coconut oil is different than other fats. How is it different?
Yeah, all fats and oils are composed of fat molecules that are known as fatty acids.
Mm-hmm.
And you can categorize the fatty acids into three groups based on their size or the length of their carbon chain. So you have short-chain fatty acids, medium-chain fatty acids, and long-chain fatty acids.
Mm-hmm.
And the vast majority of the fats and the oils that we eat, whether they're from animal or whether they're from a plant, whether they're saturated or unsaturated, the vast majority of the fats we eat are composed of long-chain
mm-hmm.
fatty acids. In fact, I would estimate that 95 to 100%
mm-hmm.
of the fats that we eat are composed of long-chain fatty acids,
mm-hmm.
unless you eat a lot of coconut or coconut oil. Coconut oil is composed predominantly of medium-chain fatty acids.
Mm-hmm.
And this is important because our bodies respond to and process these fats differently depending on their size. So the medium-chain fatty acids in coconut oil are processed. The physiological effects on our bodies are different than those that you get from eating fats made with the long-chain
mm-hmm.
fatty acids.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the difference. This is why coconut oil is different from all other fats. And it's what gives coconut oil its ability to assist in weight loss.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've talked with some people in my Search for God group about coconut oil and taking it internally, and they say to me, oh, well, I wouldn't take that because it has saturated fat. And I said, well, I understand that the saturated fat, being vegetable fat, is different than, say, fat from a cow or from a pig or what have you, and so that it's not dangerous. The saturated fat is different, and it's not harmful. Is this then the same as what you're saying, it's medium?
Correct. The saturated fats in coconut oil are medium-chain saturated fats, and so they are processed differently in the body
mm-hmm.
from the long-chain
mm-hmm.
saturated fats you get from meats or from other vegetable oils.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference are very pronounced, and studies have proven that coconut oil in the diet does not promote heart disease. It does not have any harmful effects on the heart or the arteries. In
mm-hmm.
fact, when researchers go and study groups of people who live basically on coconut oil, or coconut oil is the predominant source of fat in their diet, heart disease doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. My neighbor has a dog that I think is about 19 years old, and the poor dog was just barely getting along when she'd take her out to walk. And one day the dog was so perky, this was about a month ago, and I said to my neighbor, "Your dog is really perked up." And she said, "Yes, I've been giving her coconut oil."
You know, that's interesting, because I get lots of people contacting me, usually telling me about how coconut oil has helped them in their lives. But mm-hmm. I also get a lot of people that have given it to their dogs, to their cats, to their horses, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. other animals, and they report the same improvements mm-hmm. with help, you know, that people get, the dogs, the cats, these animals also enjoy. I mean, clearing up infections, mm-hmm. Their coats become shiny mm-hmm. and healthy,
right.
On and on and on.
Mm-hmm. Coconut oil has been called the world's only low-carbohydrate fat. How did it get that reputation?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. Coconut oil is called a low-calorie fat, and that seems like kind of opposite of what you might think.
Mm-hmm.
Because fat, you know, is fat, but the reputation is actually very much deserved, and it comes primarily because of three reasons. One is that coconut oil actually has fewer calories than any other fat. So if you replaced all the fats in your diet with coconut oil, you would actually be consuming fewer calories. Mm-hmm. So there'd be fewer calories, you know, that'd be converted into body fat. The second reason is that coconut oil has an unusual or a very pronounced effect in satisfying hunger. So if it's used in meals, when you're eating a meal that contains coconut oil, you become satisfied sooner, so you tend not to eat as much during the meal,
mm-hmm.
and you are satisfied longer between meals, so there's less of a chance that you would want a snack between meals. So at the end of the day, you end up consuming fewer calories. Therefore,
mm-hmm.
there are fewer calories left over to be converted into body fat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the third reason is that coconut oil stimulates the metabolism. It actually kicks your metabolism up into a higher gear.
Oh, really?
So that you burn off calories at an accelerated rate. And again, at the end of the day, there are fewer calories left over to be converted into body fat.
Mm-hmm.
And so for these three reasons, coconut oil has gained this reputation, and it works.
Mm-hmm. And how does the coconut oil boost the metabolism?
Well, to explain that, let me describe how fats are metabolized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you eat an ordinary fat, say from canola oil, soybean oil, corn oil, one of these typical fats that we have in the store, when you eat that, it goes through our stomach and into our intestinal tract. And
mm-hmm.
it's in the intestinal tract where the vast majority of fat metabolism and breakdown occurs. And so pancreatic digestive enzymes and bile work on the fats to break them down into individual fatty acids. Now, these long-chain fatty acids, when they're finally broken off, are absorbed into the intestinal wall. And inside the intestinal wall, they're repackaged into little bundles of fat and protein called lipoproteins.
Mm-hmm.
And these lipoproteins are then sent into the bloodstream, and as they circulate throughout the body, they release particles of fat. And this is the source of the fat that collects in our fat cells,
mm-hmm.
and it's also the source of fat that will collect in your artery walls. Now, when you eat a fat that is composed of medium-chain fatty acids like coconut oil, the process is completely different. So if you eat coconut oil, it will come through. And because it is composed of these medium-chain fatty acids, they digest very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the time they leave the stomach and enter the intestinal tract, they're already broken down into individual fatty acids. So you do not need pancreatic digestive enzymes. You do not need bile to digest them. They're already broken down. And
mm-hmm.
because they come out of the stomach already as individual fatty acids, they are immediately absorbed into the portal vein and sent directly to the liver.
Mm-hmm.
And now the liver, when it sees them, it uses them preferentially as a source of fuel to produce energy. So it doesn't make fat cells out of them. It burns them up to mm-hmm. produce energy.
Mm.
And so therefore, the medium-chain fatty acids in coconut oil bypass that lipoprotein stage in the intestinal wall.
Mm-hmm.
And they do not circulate into the bloodstream to the degree that other fats do, and therefore they do not contribute much to fat cells or to artery walls, for that matter.
That's great.
Medium-chain fatty acids actually produce energy rather than body fat.
Mm-hmm. Are there any studies, Bruce, that demonstrate the metabolic effect of the medium-chain fatty acids?
Yeah, there are actually a lot of studies that do that. For example, there was one study that they got a group of volunteers together, and they measure, when they do metabolism studies, they actually measure energy expenditure,
mm-hmm.
which is equivalent to metabolism. And so they gave these volunteers they measured energy expenditure before a meal, and they gave them the meal that contained medium-chain fatty acids, and then afterwards they measured their energy expenditure.
Mm-hmm.
This is what they found. They found in normal weight individuals, their energy expenditure after the meal or their level of metabolism increased by an amazing 48%. So their metabolism increased
mm-hmm.
by 48%.
Mm.
And that's pretty impressive in itself. But when they measured this in overweight individuals
mm-hmm.
who were part of the group, they found that their metabolism increased by a whopping 65%.
Uh-huh.
So this indicated that the more overweight
mm-hmm.
a person was, the more effect coconut oil has on stimulating metabolism, which is really good news for people who want to lose weight because they're
mm-hmm.
obviously overweight, and so coconut oil can be very effective as an aid in helping them
mm-hmm.
burn off these excess calories.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you might say, well, how long does this effect last? Is it only 1 or 2 hours? Well, in another study, they showed that after a single meal containing medium-chain fatty acids, that the volunteers, their metabolism was elevated and remained elevated for a full 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So for 24 hours, they had a higher level of energy, and they were burning off calories at
mm-hmm.
an accelerated rate.
Mm-hmm. Now, Bruce, did this vary by the time of day? Because I've read that your metabolism is highest in the morning, and consequently you should have a large breakfast because it will burn off more than any other time during the day. And so the studies, have they done different points or different times of day? Or,
well, I haven't seen any studies where they have done this at different times of day.
Mm-hmm.
However, from personal experience, I can tell you I
mm-hmm.
would prefer to do it in the morning and
mm-hmm.
the afternoons. I have
mm-hmm.
noticed that if I wait till the evening for dinner time, particularly
mm-hmm.
any time after 6 o'clock, if I use coconut oil in my dinner, I have to use only a little bit, because if I use too much,
mm-hmm.
when I go to bed at my normal time, which is about 10 o'clock, I've got too much energy, and I just can't go to sleep until like 1.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I'm not the only one that says this. I meet lots of people the same thing. If they eat coconut oil too late at night, it gives them so much energy, they can't go to sleep.
Oh.
And, you know, this is really neat, because these researchers who are doing these studies do recommend the use of coconut oil as a means to treat obesity and as a means for weight management.
Mm-hmm.
And at McGill University, the researchers there estimated that if overweight people would replace all of the fats in their diet that consisted of long-chain
mm-hmm.
fatty acids, this would be your corn oils, your safflower oils, your canola oils, your soybean oils, all of these typical
cooking
oils.
Does that include olive oil?
That would actually include olive oil, too.
It would?
Yes. If you replaced all of these oils with a fat or an oil that contained medium-chain fatty acids, mm-hmm. such as coconut oil, that you could lose up to 36 pounds a year.
Oh.
Now, this is without exercise. This is without dieting. This is without changing in any way the type of foods you eat. The only thing you would change is the type of oil you would eat. And mm-hmm. just by doing that, you could lose 36 pounds a year.
Hmm. Now, tell us then a little bit more about the diet. Is there a diet beyond switching to the coconut oil?
Well, I find that a lot of people, they just add coconut oil in their diet,
mm-hmm.
and they can lose weight. However, there are ways in which you can enhance this effect, because not everyone can just add coconut oil into your diet and lose weight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I talk about this in my book, that mm-hmm. you need to use it sensibly. You need to combine it with a sensible eating program. And mm-hmm. when you prepare your food, you use coconut oil with each meal. And the reason you do that is because it does satisfy hunger, and so you tend to eat less. And therefore, you need to consciously think, okay, I've got the oil in here. It's going to satisfy my hunger. I don't need to eat as much as I normally do. So you cut back on your calories. And you do that with each of the meals, and you can feel totally satisfied from meal to meal without feeling hungry, yet you're consuming fewer calories. And a bonus with this is you get the lift, the boost in energy that the coconut oil gives you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I do recommend a nice, healthy diet, because lots of times we overeat because we're not eating the right types of foods. Many of these processed, refined foods are deficient in essential vitamins and minerals. In
mm-hmm.
fact, I've seen some studies where it says that 80% of Americans do not get the RDA level of the normal vitamins and minerals.
Right.
So we're nutritional deficient. And what happens is that if we don't get all of our nutrients, our bodies start to have cravings to encourage us to eat more. But our problem is that we eat the wrong types of foods, so we consume lots and lots of calories without getting the essential nutrients. So the result is we are overfed but undernourished.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you talk about coconut oil, Bruce, I assume you mean the organic extra virgin, or does that not make a difference?
It doesn't make much of a difference. Well, there's two basic types of coconut oil. There's the virgin coconut oil, and then there's what's called the RBD oil, which means refined, bleached, and deodorized.
Mm-hmm.
And the basic difference between those is that the virgin oil, it's kind of like a virgin olive oil, is that it's pressed out of the coconut and very little processing has
mm-hmm.
been done. And so it retains a delicate, wonderful coconut flavor and aroma. And that is the premium grade coconut oil. That's the type that I like to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the RBD oil has gone through more processing.
Mm-hmm.
Usually they don't use chemicals when they process coconut oil, so it's gone through more heat and other things, and it's usually tasteless. And
mm-hmm.
it's okay to use, but it's not as natural. And then there's actually, I guess you'd call a third type of coconut oil, and that would be hydrogenated coconut oil. And when the hydrogenated oils, they always ruin them, because you create toxic trans fatty acids. Whether it's a corn oil or a soybean oil or a coconut oil, you don't want to eat hydrogenated vegetable oil.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, are there any harmful effects to the taking of coconut oil?
You know, I've been studying this for many years, and I haven't seen any harmful effects. The worst thing that would really happen is if you're not accustomed to eating a lot of oil in your diet, and a lot of people aren't, because
mm-hmm.
We've been told to not eat fat, to
right.
eat low-fat this, and so a lot of people aren't accustomed to eating much fat. And so when people start to increase their fat consumption, whether it's coconut oil or some other oil, it could loosen their bowels a little bit. But
mm-hmm.
this is a temporary thing, and after a few days, your body becomes accustomed to it, and that's gone. Now, another thing that you might want to be aware of if you're just starting to use coconut oil is that coconut oil is such a healthy, health-promoting oil that when you eat it, it can initiate a healing crisis or a cleansing crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that?
No.
Yeah, and so people who start it may start feeling like they got the flu, or they may have a skin outbreak, or intestinal problems. Well, it's not that the oil is bad for them. It's not the oil that they have an allergic reaction to it, or any of these things. It's because the oil is cleansing toxins out of their body. So they just need to allow the oil to continue its cleansing effect, remove these toxins from the body, and once the toxins are gone, the symptoms go away and you feel great. You feel better than you have before, and just continue with the coconut oil.
Mm-hmm. What I do, Bruce, is I usually, when I'm getting it ready to put on my body after I shower, I take my finger and scoop up like a spoonful, and I take it like that. I like the taste of it.
I do, too, and I often do that, too. I use it in my cooking whenever I can, but
mm-hmm.
if I don't eat anything that uses oil in it, I'll just take a spoon, and I'll dip it in, and I'll put it in my mouth. And
mm-hmm.
you know, the way I like to do that the best is to have the coconut oil in a solid state,
mm-hmm. right,
and
uh-huh.
put the oil in my mouth as a lump, and I just let it sit either on my tongue or under my tongue and just let it kind of melt on its own. It only takes about a minute.
Right.
But it's a very pleasant way to take it. It doesn't make your mouth feel greasy or uncomfortable.
No.
It's just a real nice way to have it.
Right. And this time of the year, it comes semi-solid. Yeah, that's the way I take it also.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting characteristics of coconut oil. If people aren't familiar with it, they'll kind of question, you know, sometimes they'll see it being hard, and sometimes it will be liquid.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is that coconut oil has a fairly high melting point, and it melts at 76 degrees and higher. And so if the temperature is below 76 degrees, it will harden up, and it'll be white and somewhat hard like butter. And above that, it'll be liquid like any other vegetable oil.
Mm-hmm. I interviewed Seth Roberts, and his book is all about using olive oil. Basically, his diet was to take olive oil, but not to smell the olive oil when you were taking it. So,
well, that's interesting.
So to me, it's very similar.
Uh-huh. Well, I imagine that the olive oil would have some of the similar effects with coconut oil, and the fact that it's a good oil and it will help to satisfy hunger and such.
Mm-hmm.
As well. One thing that the olive oil won't have, though, is the ability to stimulate the metabolism like coconut oil does.
Right, right. And olive oil, I think you said, is not a
medium-chain fatty acid.
Medium,
that's
right.
Correct. Olive
right.
oil is a long-chain fatty acid, just like most of the other oils in our diet.
Mm-hmm. So it would be more harmful if you took a lot of it.
Well, not necessarily harmful. It just wouldn't have the health benefits that the medium-chain fatty acids provide.
Mm-hmm. But it would have the trans fats.
Well, it wouldn't have trans fats unless it's been hydrogenated during
okay.
the processing.
Oh, okay. I didn't understand all that. Yeah.
Hydrogenation is a process that manufacturers use. They'll take a vegetable oil
mm-hmm.
and they hydrogenate it, and in that process it becomes harder. Like margarine or
mm-hmm.
shortening is what they use hydrogenated oils for. And in that process, a very toxic fatty acid, man-made fatty acid, is formed
mm-hmm.
called a trans fatty acid. And you've probably heard a lot about
mm-hmm.
trans fatty acids
right.
in the news recently and how bad they are.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, what inspired you to write the book?
Well, you know, I've written several books on coconut and a few on coconut oil. Actually, the first coconut book I wrote was on coconut oil. It was called The Coconut Oil Miracle.
Mm-hmm.
And in this book, I talk a little bit about the weight loss aspects of coconut oil. And after it was published, people started contacting me and say, hey, I started using coconut oil and I lost 10, 20, 30 pounds. And so many people were contacting me, telling me these stories. I thought, well, you know, I ought to write a book devoted specifically on how to use coconut oil to lose weight. I have all these testimonials, and I have the science to back it up. Mm-hmm. And so that's what led me to write the book, Eat Fat, Look Thin.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, is there anything else you'd like to say then about the weight loss diet?
Well, people can lose weight simply by adding coconut oil in their diet, but I think they do that because they're eating right to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
People that don't eat right, they eat at fast food places, they eat garbage food, and they add coconut oil in their diet, they don't see any weight loss. And
mm-hmm.
so you have to combine the oil with a sensible eating plan.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, as described in my book, you can lose the weight, and some people have lost up to 100 pounds within 2 years.
Wow.
Basically following this plan, so it does work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then, Bruce, would you tell the listeners about your other books and the products you have and how they can locate these and also how they can reach you?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I've got several books on coconut and other coconut-related products. My first book was called The Coconut Oil Miracle. I have a follow-up book on that one called Coconut Cures. And then, of course, I have the one that we've talked about, Eat Fat, Look Thin. I also have one on coconut water. Coconut water is another marvelous benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And after writing some of these books, people would contact me and say, hey, we're convinced we want to add coconut into our diet, but we don't know how to use it. And so that led me to write another book called The Coconut Lover's Cookbook. And so that teaches people how to incorporate coconut oil in their diet.
Mm-hmm.
I also have a book on coconut flour, which is a very interesting product. It's a low-carb, gluten-free flour they can use like wheat flour to make breads and cakes and muffins and et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And so if any of your listeners are interested in exploring some of these books, I invite them to come to my website, which is www.piccadillybooks.com. And Piccadilly is spelled P-I-C-C-A-D-I-L-L-Y, books, B-O-O-K-S.com. So it's piccadillybooks.com. And they can see these books and several others I have written on various health aspects.
Well, I come across your name all the time, Bruce, when I'm looking anything coconut oil, so I would say that you are the expert in this area.
Well, I kind of started the trend. I was the first one to write a book on coconut, and since then I've done several more. So, yeah, if you go on the Internet, you'll see me quoted everywhere.
So it's always good to talk with the expert. Is that not right?
Yes.
Well, I appreciate very much, Bruce, that you took the time to talk with me today, and I know this will be valuable information to all of the listeners.
It was a pleasure, Carl.
Thank you, Bruce.
You bet.
My second guest is Stacy Grieve, who is author of Why Are You Weighing? And who lost 135 pounds following the advice in her book, and she has kept it off for 6 years. She believes that our thoughts and feelings are very important in weight loss. She is available for coaching, and more information is available at www.whyareyouweighing.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Stacy, and I look forward to an interesting discussion on your weight loss of 135 pounds.
I lost the whole person.
Right, you sure did. Can you tell us your story and your weight loss journal?
Basically, I was an overweight child who grew up to be an obese adult. I was in kindergarten when most kids weigh about 45 pounds. I weighed about 90.
Mm-hmm.
At age 15, my weight was about 215, and then I topped out in my 20s at over 300 pounds, about 306 pounds.
Wow.
Now, I never had a problem with dieting. I could always diet. I was very good. I was focused. I'd put the blinders on, and I could get the weight off pretty quickly. My challenge was always in keeping it off.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of every diet, what always started to happen was the minute I went back to eating normally, the weight would start to come back, and always it ended up coming back with a vengeance. And what I found was that dieting actually caused me to end up weighing more.
Oh, really?
Well, I've never actually kept track of how much it was exactly. I'm quite sure that I have shed and then regained well over 300 pounds in my life as well. So it was a long haul. I started to think there had to be something, that it had to be something to do with me, that it wasn't, I was very determined that there had to be a solution out there. And while dieting didn't seem to be the answer, I didn't know what else to do. I had asked my physician for a referral to a psychologist who dealt with eating disorders. I felt that, you know, there was something going on emotionally or mentally for me that I needed to address. And so I spent an hour and a half with this fellow, and it was, some of it was very typical, tell me about your childhood and all that sort of stuff. And at the end of the 90 minutes, he said to me, I've got good news and bad news. I said, well, what's the good news? He said, the good news is there's nothing wrong with you. The bad news is I can't help you, which, of course, was very dismaying to me. He then went on to explain how dieting just doesn't work, that it trains the brain into cycles of deprivation followed by cycles of excess, and that was, in fact, what I had trained my body to do, and it was completely normal for me because I was depriving myself, that when the deprivation was over, that I basically gorged myself, and that's why the weight returned. So he basically said to me that in order to maintain my weight and learn to manage my weight forever, that I was going to have to give up dieting as a tool. And I have to say that news at the time upset me greatly. I didn't know what other choices or solutions I had. Dieting had been my only hope, even though it wasn't really working. It got me thin, but only temporarily. But I decided that if this guy was supposed to be an expert, I'd better listen to him. So I gave up dieting about 2 days later, and things really started to shift and change for me. The ups and downs slowed down. There were still ups and downs, but they weren't in the same magnitude that they had been before when I was dieting. And that led me down a different path where I started to look at more of my emotional, what was going on with me emotionally, my fears, that sort of thing. And ultimately what led to my success was I realized that I needed to pay more attention to the organ that was in my head between my ears than the organ that was down in my stomach. So by switching my focus to my brain rather than my stomach, I finally got the results that I was looking for.
So is that why you say in the book that it's not the food that makes you fat?
Exactly. Anybody who's repeatedly gaining and shedding weight, there's something going on for you emotionally or in the brain that's directing you to go to the fridge and to eat and to overeat as a coping mechanism. And until you figure out what that is for you, and it's different for all of us, but until you figure out what that is for you, dieting at best is only going to give you temporary solutions.
Right. And what roles, then, do the conscious and unconscious minds play in our weight challenges?
Well, there's two parts of the mind, the conscious and the subconscious. And most of us think, unless you've been educated on this, we all tend to think that it's the conscious mind that's actually ruling us. But it's been proven now beyond a shadow of a doubt that, in fact, it's our subconscious mind that makes about 95% of the decisions that we make every single day. And the decisions, basically, those types of decisions are things that we think of as habits. When you get out of bed in the morning, you know, your routine, which pant leg do you put on first? What's your routine? All those things are habits. Well, we've built habits around food, around eating, around portion sizes, good habits, bad habits, whatever. And those habits all get stored in our subconscious. So unless we are consciously making a decision, and that's really quite rare, what ends up happening really is that we're on autopilot. And so you're sitting there, you're maybe feeling a little bit bored, and your autopilot goes, okay, boredom equals let's move to the fridge. So without even really realizing it, you get up out of your chair, you move to the fridge, you open the fridge, you start grazing on something or binging on something. And really, all that's happening without your conscious awareness of it. If you were consciously aware of it, you could then make the choice about, well, okay, I'm bored. Do I really want to eat? Or should I, in fact, go for a walk or call a friend or pick up a book? So it really is our habits that get stored in our subconscious. And so those habits have to be reprogrammed in order for you to maintain the permanent success with your weight.
This is interesting, Stacy, because I had Caroline Corey on about a month ago, and she has been able to see energy since she was 5 years old.
Wow.
And she also talked about the role of the unconscious. She used the example of weight loss, and she said often people will say, yeah, I want to lose weight, but unconsciously they're feeling I'm not good enough, I don't deserve to lose weight, and so forth. And consequently, they don't lose weight. And she said that most physicians and other healthcare professionals will deal with symptoms rather than getting at the underlying cause, which is the unconscious. And
exactly.
So she's able to see the energy, and she can go back and regenerate the cells, and she works with all kinds of addiction and is quite successful. She said the same thing that you're saying, is that you've got to pay attention to both the conscious and the unconscious.
Exactly.
And how does fear enter into all of this in terms of gaining weight?
Well, there's really only two true emotions in life, joy and fear. The positive being joy and the negative being fear. And really every other emotion comes out of one of those two.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the negative ones, with fear can also manifest as anger. It can manifest as jealousy. It can, you know, any one of the myriad of sort of negative emotions we have, really, if you dig down deep, they're fear-based.
Mm-hmm.
And so what ends up happening is our fat can, in fact, become sort of a buffer or an armor to protect us against what we fear.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's very different for everyone, and I don't try to speak for other people. I can only speak for myself, but what I do with my book and my coaching is help the people understand what their fears are.
Mm-hmm.
In my particular case, I definitely had a fear around being good enough. I didn't feel that I was good enough to be slim, so
mm-hmm.
I needed to work on that.
Mm-hmm.
I had a fear about being abandoned. That was a big one for me, and so I used my weight to actually keep me out of relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't be abandoned if I wasn't in
mm-hmm.
a relationship in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So it took me a long time to understand that. Louise Hay, in her book, You Can Heal Your Life,
right.
She actually talks about how various different places on the body where you store fat is related to specific negative emotions, again, fear-based. So I don't get that specific with it. I just believe that, in my experience has been, that carrying around that extra weight, there's something you're using that weight to hide behind.
Mm-hmm.
And until you figure that out, again, you can temporarily get rid of the weight, but as long as it's serving a purpose for you, i.e. protecting you against something, your brain will find a way to build it back on your body unless you deal with the underlying emotions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, Stacey, you lost 135 pounds. How long did it take you to lose that weight?
It took me quite a while. Again, I was a very good yo-yo dieter. In my 20s, I shed about 135 pounds right out of the gate, quickly regained almost all of it, worked on shedding some more, quickly regained almost all of it again. Then when I met with that psychotherapist who got me off dieting, like I say, the ups and downs slowed down. It really wasn't until I was in my very early 40s that I finally got a handle on it all,
mm-hmm.
and got the weight down permanently, and it stayed down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been almost 7 years now that I've maintained my current weight quite easily. Now, I still have little ups and downs, you know, maybe 5 pounds,
mm-hmm.
you know, which
mm-hmm.
I think is pretty average for people. You go on vacation, you know, after Christmas, those sorts of things. But my fluctuations now are much, much smaller. And really, I know my fluctuations aren't a surprise to me anymore. They
mm-hmm.
used to be a surprise. I couldn't figure out why I would get up one day and my pants didn't fit anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Now if I get up and my pants are a little snug, I know exactly why that's happened. I take responsibility for it, and I know what I need to do to turn it back around.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very different experience for me now.
Well, that's wonderful that you've been able to keep it off that long, because that's
mm-hmm.
very unusual.
Mm-hmm.
And a question that I have, Stacey, is how did you go about identifying the unconscious motivations?
Again, a long and winding journey. And what my hope with my book is that I systemize the journey for other people so it doesn't take nearly as long as it takes for them as it did for me.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I just had this underlying feeling that there was something with me, that it had to have something to do with me, that I didn't like feeling like I was at the mercy of the food. Very overweight people, where it's a real serious addiction, a common theme is that they feel like they have no choice, that the food has power over them.
Mm-hmm.
And while there certainly was times in my life where I felt like that, as I got older and became more educated about just life in general, I came to understand that really I was responsible for all the results in my life in every area, professional, personal, and certainly my weight was no different. And so I started to look down different paths. I got into the spiritual world. I actually learned a whole lot about myself as related to weight through a business course I was taking, a home study business course.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the aha moments for me out of that was actually I was reading about, I had been in business for a while, and I was getting some results, but not the results I was hoping for. And in this home study business course, there was a line about you have to see yourself as a businesswoman in order to create the kind of business you want to have. And that was a big aha for me. I realized I wasn't seeing myself as a businesswoman. And just changing that little shift in my business made a difference. But the bigger aha for me in terms of my life was I also realized part of the reason why I regained the weight, and while I was still struggling at that point to get down to a healthy level and stay there, was that regardless of what the scale said, I never saw myself in my mind's eye as a slim person.
Mm-hmm.
The scales might have said I weighed 155, but in my mind, I still weighed 275.
Mm-hmm.
And because the brain, again, the subconscious, and your mind's eye view of yourself is stored in your subconscious, because my mind's eye view of myself was that of a heavy woman, regardless of what the scale said, my subconscious would then lead me and direct me into activities that caused my physical body to match my mind's eye view.
Mm-hmm.
So from that day forward, once I figured that out, in order to do that, I did things like I removed any of the fat pictures I had of me around the house. If I was heavier than I wanted to be in those pictures, I took them down. I replaced them with pictures of myself when I was slim and at a weight I liked. I did affirmations around, I am a slim and healthy woman. I live in a slim and healthy body.
Mm-hmm.
So I really just worked on reprogramming my subconscious so that my mind's eye view of myself matched my physical real view of myself. And once that happened, then my mind no longer directed me to try and get me back to be the 200-plus woman. It was happy where I was. My mind's eye view matched the real view, and I've maintained it very easily since then.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like you were using somewhat of a holistic approach in that you removed things, you were doing things physically, but you also were using affirmations. And were you doing prayer and meditation or anything like that?
Very little. I actually used prayer more way back when I was out of control. I remember I would be so upset, and I would lie in bed every night praying, you know, why am I fat? Why is this happening to me?
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately never getting the answers. I think God speaks to us in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And God spoke to me finally through a number of different aha moments years later once I had taken responsibility for my own life and for my own results. I was looking for a quick, easy fix. I wanted to wake up one day and poof, there had been a miracle. And 100-plus pounds were gone. Unfortunately, that's not the way it works.
Right.
So, or at least it certainly wasn't the way it worked for me.
Right.
To be honest with you, I dabble in meditation. It's something I'm curious about and interested in doing more of it, but it hasn't played a big role in my life so far. But the next stage of my life, it's definitely going to play a bigger role.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for a teacher, actually, at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, the old adage that when the pupil is ready, the teacher will appear.
Exactly.
And I have found in life that always happens with me. And also, you mentioned that God spoke to you in sort of intuition. I have found in life that God speaks to me in maybe three ways. One is through my dreams, and often I can solve problems in my dreams. Second is through intuition, and third is through people that I meet. It's almost like God puts people in your way. For example, when I was diagnosed with lung cancer 33 years ago, I had a dream that told me to go for a chest x-ray. Then, someone that was in my study group was available to me day or night, was a support system. She also did all kinds of things that facilitated my recovery, even though my doctor had given me 6 months to live. And
wow.
As I say, that was 33 years ago. So God, I know, put her in my path, gave me the dream that got me to the x-ray so that it was early enough. It's just amazing to me that always, especially when I have a health problem, one of these three methods always seem to work.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah.
I have found quite often, you know, when you're stumbling around and you're looking for solutions for something, so it's like synchronicity. All of a sudden, someone appears who's got the answers for you, or at least can get you down, you know, going on a different path. And it's, you know, we tend to say, oh, what a coincidence. But there are no coincidences in life,
no.
I don't think so. I completely agree with you.
And you mentioned Louise Hay, so I assume you did lots of reading during that time, both to look at other people's stories of weight loss, but also it sounds like for trying to become a better person or have a better self-concept.
Exactly. All of the above. I was very curious once I started to learn about spirituality and the metaphysical world and how that all that played into it.
Mm-hmm.
I became fascinated with that and started reading things that honestly 10 years ago I would never have read.
Right, right.
It's funny that, you know, the twists and turns life takes you on.
Right.
And so I started just devouring a lot of different types of books and related to that and just became immersed in it. And again, all of that really, when you get to the underlying messages, you know, we are the creators of our own life.
Right.
And what I believe that to mean is, you know, we are responsible for the good, the bad, and the ugly in our lives.
Right.
And that
mm-hmm.
until you take responsibility and recognize that you have the power to change whatever is going on in your life, if you're not happy with it, if you're not liking it, and certainly, you know, weight is one of them.
Right.
Although at first that can seem like a kind of daunting undertaking, there's actually a huge amount of freedom and power in that once you truly understand it. You're no longer at the mercy of the fate, that you can do with your life what you want to do with it. Now, I'm not saying it's easy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely not saying it's easy, but it is so worth it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's possible that your weight was leading you on a spiritual path to begin with, because it's gotten you off on a spiritual path.
Yes, exactly.
I try to look at everything in a positive framework. And from that point of view, I would see that your weight was positive because it was the motivating force that got you on a spiritual path, which to me is the most important aspect of our being.
I don't disagree with you.
I think they're all important. I think it's the combination of the physical, mental, spiritual, but I think that the spiritual, and like you, that was a part of my life that was starved, because I had gone from high school to nursing school to my baccalaureate to my master's to my second master's to my doctorate, and there was not time for spiritual activities in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Then when a book about Edgar Cayce flew out of the bookshelf at Barnes & Noble's and dropped on the floor in front of me,
there's a sign.
And I picked up the book and read it, and then that's when I got into the Search for God groups and then much more into spiritual concepts. It was almost like I was starved in that area of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Does language play a role in weight, or do people in all cultures, all societies, go through the same sort of process to lose weight, or is there anything peculiar about language?
Well, language definitely plays a role in weight, both externally and internally. I think the common misconceptions around weight, we all talk about losing weight. How much weight have you lost? How much weight do you need to lose?
Mm-hmm.
I'm losing weight, those sorts of things. Now, again, going back to the subconscious, our driving force, our autopilot, we are programmed that when you've lost something, your brain is going to want to find it again.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's your keys, your grocery list, or your money, the minute you realize you've lost it, your brain just becomes completely focused on finding it again, retracing your steps, whatever it takes to find the keys, the money, your grocery list. Well, the exact same is true with your weight. If you're walking around talking about how you've lost weight or you're losing weight, on a subconscious level, the minute your brain hears that word, it starts figuring out how to find it again.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the first things I teach people to do is to replace that word loss.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels a little weird because everybody talks about weight loss, the weight loss industry, that kind of thing. But the word I prefer is shedding. That works for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I talk about shedding weight. If I see someone and I see that there's a physical difference, I'll say, you know, great, how much weight have you shed? You know, that kind of thing. Because to shed something doesn't imply that it's going to then come back. A
mm-hmm.
snake sheds its skin and that's it, it's gone. It's
mm-hmm.
done with, it's over with. So that's the first way language plays into it.
Mm-hmm.
The other part of language that's very, very important when dealing with weight loss is how we speak to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We all have self-talk. We all have that little voice in the back of our head that is going on. It's chattering away basically 24/7. And again, it's the subconscious mind where this chatter is happening. And so unless you make a conscious effort, a conscious awareness of bringing it up into your conscious so that you can pay active attention to it and decide if it's serving you or not, you can actually be talking to yourself very, very negatively.
Mm-hmm.
When you learn to pay attention to your self-talk, almost everybody is shocked to horrified to learn how negatively they've been speaking to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that. You're too stupid. Who do you think you are? Those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
Where really we should be talking to ourselves in a much more positive, comforting sort of way.
Right.
More like a coach. You can
mm-hmm.
do this. You go for it. You've got the skills. You'll meet the people you need. A much more empowering way of talking. most of the subconscious actually is actually planted and set between the ages of 0 to 5. That's why they're called the formative years.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, we hear the word no. It's estimated somewhere around 5,000 times. You know, our parents are being caregivers, and they don't want us touching the hot stove or running out into traffic or going out of the house naked or any of the other myriad things that a child might try to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we hear the word no, 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 no over and over again. And unfortunately, that's a negative word, and it gets transplanted in our subconscious. And so when we go to embark on something, this little voice in the back of our head can be, you know, no, you won't be able to do that, or no, who do you think you are?
Mm-hmm.
So first you need to be aware of how you speak to yourself, and then if you're like 99.9% of the population, then you need to work on reprogramming it so that it becomes more positive, it becomes your coach.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, my self-talk, before I figured all this out, my self-talk definitely was around things like, who do I think I am to be thin? You're not worthy of being thin. And then it was like, you'll never be thin. You've always been fat. This is never going to happen. Well, those messages over and over and over again don't do anything to help you get to where you want to be.
Right, right.
But you need to know they're there in the first place before you can change them.
Mm-hmm. Stacy, would you then like to tell us about your book and how the listeners can locate your book? And
Sure. Thank you, Carl. My book is available at www.whyareyouwaiting.com, and waiting is spelled W-E-I-G-H-T-I-N-G. We also have various different ways you can interact with the website. You can become a free member at absolutely no cost, and with that, you can see everything on the website for what's involved with it. But you'll receive a newsletter, you know, be kept up to date with what's going on. And then we have a couple of other levels, paid levels, that you can interact with the website and with me and with and that sort of thing. The book is only available through my website. It's not available in stores, and it's $21.95. And what you're going to learn in the book is basically a lot of the ideas we've just been talking about here. You're going to learn things like how your brain works to keep you heavy. We touched on it today with the conscious versus the subconscious, and then we get into something called paradigms. We'll talk more about the language around weight. For instance, we talked about lose, lost, and lost, but there's also the battle of the bulge. We talk about the battle of the bulge. Well, what does that do? That sets up an adversarial relationship between your mind and your body. You need to work on reprogramming that. We do a huge amount of work around loving yourself, learning to increase your self-respect. Well, that automatically leads to treating yourself better, and interestingly, the whole world starts to treat you differently.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
We go over facing your fears. We get into perfectionism, which is also fear-based, and there's a huge propensity in overweight people towards perfectionism. So that's something else we talk about.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about bringing pleasure back into eating. Those of us that have had, a weight issue for a while, as much as we want to do it, it's also we know it's not helping us. And there's a whole bunch of negative energy ends up coming around the act of, you know, eating and nourishing ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we do some exercises to bring pleasure back into eating.
Right.
We help you with your triggers for what's causing you to overeat in the first place. Again, becoming aware of them and then working on changing them. Speaking of change, when you shed a lot of weight, whether maybe 5 pounds isn't going to change your life, but certainly when you get beyond that, when you start to get into more major amounts of weight, so much more in your life changes than just the size of your clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, most people, they shed the weight and they go off into the world and they're completely unprepared for the changes that are going to happen to them, changes in how people relate to you. And not all of it is positive. You'd think it would be, but it isn't. So we cover how to deal with that. For those who are not necessarily the do-it-yourselfers and who want a little extra help, we also have what's called the Triumph Coaching Program. So we help you finally triumph over your weight. And basically what we do is we take all the concepts from the book and we go into them much more specifically.
Well, I've enjoyed this, Stacy, and I appreciate very much your being with us today.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Tonight, we'll complete a month on interviews on weight loss. My next program will again focus on spiritual aspects with an interview with Sadhguru, a holy man and mystic from India, and with Cheryl Simone, who wrote Midnights with the Mystic, with Sadhguru. I'm also repeating an interview with Padma, who has received 47 comments on my website after the BBS radio interview. So I hope you will join us for this program. I also hope you will visit my website at www.holistichealthshow.com. There you can order my recent book, Healthy Holistic Aging. You will also find some ebooks for sale.
I will be adding ebooks and CDs as they are completed. These will be available on my website and on Amazon.com. I am also available for consultation on holism and wellness activities and lectures and workshops. I thank you for joining the Holistic Health Show tonight. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host, wishing you a good evening.